Hello, and welcome to this edition of PainCast by the Pain Science Division of the Canadian Physiotherapy Association. I'm Lisa Carlesso, and I'm really excited to introduce this latest content as one of our members, Irfan Jessa, has graciously allowed us to eavesdrop on his interview with Dr. Trish Parsons of Queen's University on the subject of narrative medicine or narrative practice. As you will hear, this is a highly relevant topic for our clinical interactions with patients, and I think you'll agree after listening that it can be helpful not only for our patients, but also for us as practitioners. So settle in for the next half hour and enjoy.
I'm very excited to be talking with Dr. Trish Parsons today about a new and increasingly popular area of practice known as narrative medicine or narrative practice. Trish Parsons is the chair of the Cardiorespiratory Division of the Canadian Physiotherapy Association and an associate professor at the Queen's University School of Rehabilitation Therapy. So Trish, welcome. Thank you for being here. And I'll give you a few moments to introduce yourself.
Wonderful. And thank you for this opportunity, Irfan. I really appreciate it. So again, I am a faculty member at Queen's University and have been since 2009. I am a Queen's graduate. I did my undergraduate degree from Queen's University and worked as a physiotherapist mostly in smaller communities in Ontario, so in smaller places around Kingston and up into the Ottawa Valley a bit. My research interests right now are in the field of renal rehabilitation, so I work with people who live with complex and episodic health conditions. And my interest in narrative practice was really born out of sharing stories with patients and trying to understand their situations and how the sharing of that story actually had an impact. So I'm very much looking forward to the opportunity to talk to you about what narrative practice is and how this relates to pain sciences.
That's great. So let's get kind of right into the basic part of this, which is tell us kind of exactly what is narrative medicine and narrative practice.
Great. And a great question, because I'm pretty sure it was a new term to me when I came across it. So for narrative practice is really based on the construct of narrative medicine, which was a term coined and defined by Dr. Rita Sharon. As a clinical practice, which is fortified by narrative competence, the capacity to recognize, absorb, metabolize, interpret, and be moved by stories of illness. So Dr. Sharon led the foundation of the program in narrative medicine at Columbia University, and that's where physicians receive mandatory training in narrative medicine as a part of their program. Narrative practice is a term that evolved out of the reality that the tools, techniques, and approaches that were developed in narrative medicine really can be applied to a broader interdisciplinary sector. So that is other health professionals, as well as groups who might be within and outside healthcare. So people like artists and engineers and other groups. So as much as narrative practice is a concept, it actually functions as a practice, as something we do in order to sustain our capacities to elicit, attend to, and be moved by story.
So you kind of alluded to this in your introduction in terms of how you became interested in it. In terms of the areas of physiotherapy where you practiced, is there maybe a specific example or a specific case where you came to appreciate the idea of sharing stories with your clients?
Yeah, very much. And I think when I first came across this, it was really, touching on what I loved most about being a physiotherapist, and that was the opportunity to listen to and learn from the stories of my patients. So very early in my career, I can remember being struck by how rare a privilege it was to have the trust of people I worked with and for the willingness with which they would share the stories of their lives. So for as much as I felt, we helped them, I realized that the nature of our practice is truly reciprocal. We offer counsel, intervention, and support. And in turn, our patients, they teach us. We learn about their lived experience 15 years or so ago, but I hadn't had much opportunity to investigate it until I became an AMS Phoenix Fellow. And the AMS is the Associated Medical Services, funds work and have funded work related to the history of medicine, healthcare education, compassionate care, and bioethics. And so the AMS Phoenix Project, the Call to Caring Project, is a multi-year project that sought to create positive and lasting change in how our healthcare professionals develop and sustain their capacities to provide humane care for patients. So under that project, I've been working to develop a photo documentary of a person living with a complex health condition. She lives with end-stage kidney disease, heart disease, and cancer. And so Karen's story, when I first learned about her story, it had a very powerful impact on me. And I had the opportunity to invite her to share her story with others and watch what kind of impact that had on them. Her experiences with rehabilitation and with kidney disease were so different than the reports of what we currently had, what we currently read, and what we could expect to achieve out of rehabilitation, that I was really compelled to ask for her permission to capture and share her story. In an effort of raising awareness of the need for rehab in that group of individuals who's traditionally been overlooked. So once the photo documentary was developed, I began to look at ways to incorporate it into learning events or to different types of opportunities, and I found myself being led back to the work of Dr. Sharon in narrative medicine. And so I started by enrolling in a couple of intensive workshops on narrative medicine through Columbia University, and I guess the rest, as they say, is history. I was converted fairly quickly after that.
And I think it's actually quite fascinating about the scope of what narrative practice can actually mean, because I think just on a very superficial level, it might imply, I think, to some people, this idea of stories in terms of being something either that's written or that's verbal. But as you pointed out, there it can take on many different media and many different forms.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of the pedagogical work that these groups have done, so the groups at Columbia and other locations, they really explore other media. So everything from film to art to photography to poetry to literature as ways and tools to develop this ability to listen to story and elicit the story of others.
One of the things that, as I continue to learn about this practice, that I found quite interesting is that and again, this is something that you sort of alluded to already, is that the benefits in terms of this type of approach can be both for the client but also for the clinician. So can you talk a little bit more about what those potential benefits are for both on sort of both sides of the practice there?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I guess starting with the client, you know, to be heard, to be really heard, we know is therapeutic. And so the more we are able to reach a deep understanding of our patients, the better we'll be able to provide them with counsel or with interventions that will meet their expectations and help them to achieve their goals as partners in their care. So I think we just, by doing this type of work, it can lead us to paths where we're more effective in our role and are able to better meet the needs of our patients. And there is a prevalent misconception that evidence-based practice means that you're providing the single best treatment that has the highest quality of research evidence in support of it. And that's, you know, all it means. And while that is a simple idea and one that makes sense, you know, when I first learned about evidence-based practice, that's what I thought it meant. The truth is often much more complex. And in fact, when we think of evidence-based practice, we define it as practice which emerges from your combined best research evidence with the experience of the clinician and the experience of the values of the patient. And so narrative practice really, in my opinion, helps us to develop skills which unlock that patient experience piece and allow us to contribute to real evidence-based practice and individualized patient-centered care. With respect to the clinician, as a clinician, I have found that narrative practice has helped me to be more patient and more observant. It's helped me to sustain my own empathy and to teach me a lot about the types of stories that I listen to. So what types of stories I listen to, the parts of stories I attend to, and those which I ignore, often very subconsciously without even realizing that I was ever doing it. It's afforded me a way into a deeper understanding of others and also to develop the ability to better tolerate kind of ambiguity and uncertainty. There are many times in our practice where the answer is unclear. Through narrative work, I've developed resources that really help me to resist the urge to come to quick conclusions on things, particularly things that needed more pondering time. And finally, narrative practice for me has benefits which translate to my work in interprofessional teams. And a lot of the practice and the activities that you do are about sharing perspectives and understanding different perspectives, which can really help coming at problems from different points of view.
I think those are a couple of really interesting points. I really appreciate that you had touched on this idea of what exactly evidence-based practice or evidence-informed practice, how that can actually be defined and how that works into and how narrative practice would work in with that, because I do see that that is a bit of an area of a little bit of misunderstanding and a little bit of debate in terms of what it actually means and how exactly to do it. And I think that the way that you framed it there is makes it actually quite inclusive for all different types of knowledge to be incorporated through there. I think the other thing about the when you were talking there about the benefits to the clinician is it's also an area, that area of being comfortable with ambiguity is something that I think can cause people a lot of discomfort in terms of not quite having the answer through there. And so I think that's also a very sort of valuable thing to consider as well.
Yeah.
So turning a little into more of a bit of an applied sort of perspective on this, let's talk about how to actually take this idea of narrative practice and see kind of what it actually looks like in terms of a physiotherapy assessment, for example. So whether that's in a private practice context or in another context, what exactly does narrative practice, what does the application of that actually look like in the context of an assessment?
Yeah. And so so when I think of narrative practice, a lot of the work that we do and what we've built into a course that I teach at Queen's University revolve around close reading of art, so literary text or art or movies or things of that nature, and then reflective writing, where we do reflective writing. When you talk about actually incorporating some of these principles and ideas into a practice assessment, what I kind of came back to and what called to my mind were actually some suggestions that Dr. Rita Sharon actually raised. So I'm going to give her credit for these and how I've kind of adapted them into my role as a physiotherapist. And the first thing that she talks about is to reconsider how you approach your opening question on any given assessment. And she recommends a version of kind of the following, which I've paraphrased to kind of fit my thoughts of what physiotherapy is and what I'm there to do with a patient. And so basically, you know, instead of saying, you know, what's your chief complaint, what is it that brings you here today, that it's really to start from a point of, you know, hello, I'm Trish, and I'm a physiotherapist, and I work to help people return to the activities and the roles of their life that are most meaningful to them, using exercise, advice, or other kind of non-drug-based treatments. In order to help you, I need to understand information about your life and your health history. What do you think is important that I know about you in your current situation? So what I find with narrative practice, how it often incorporates, is getting me to think about what really open-ended prompting questions are for my clients and how to allow them space to own language and in their own way, and then being very receptive through, again, that kind of preparatory activity of practicing on literature, on short stories, on other media, I become better able to attend to the details of their story, to pick up the diagnostic pieces that I need in order to help them, but also then being open and receptive to other things that I learn in terms of their values and personal beliefs and what's actually important to them. And the second kind of suggestion then that kind of is born out of narrative practice and again came from Rita Sharon was that after a history is finished, she'll actually allow her patients to review whatever she's written. So this works best, I guess, in electronic media, right, where you could write a note and allow a patient to actually read what you've written and ask them if it's correct. You know, have I captured this accurately? I think many of us are trained to do that verbally by, you know, restating what we've heard and then having the patient have the opportunity to refute or confirm. But she actually really encourages a mode where you allow them to read your writing and then have their feedback on that writing and make edits. She's even gone so far as to say, I let patients write their notes. I haven't yet gone to that level, but I certainly have started to incorporate more of, you know, an openness over the chart and over what part of the story we're capturing together.
So going back to that first part about starting with that very kind of open-ended question with the history, do you find that clients or patients are surprised by that?
The short answer is yes. I think especially the folks that I work with who have long histories with the health system. So when I work with dialysis patients or people with kidney disease, they've often been in and out of the system for a long time. But it usually, in my experience with reframing that orienting question and reframing where we start, they usually fall in fairly quickly to talking about the things that matter to them and the things that they would like me to know about where they're at.
So would it be fair to say that because where that question was coming from on my end was if there was a lack of buy-in maybe from the client side, but is that a bit more of a perception, or is that that's quickly overcome?
I think in my experience with it is that many people have a story. They have the story of their experiences when they've lived, particularly for a long time with an illness, like they have a story. And so it's about creating that safe, comfortable place where they can feel like that story can be and where they can bring it out. So for, you know, I'm always cautious in that, you know, there is no single one person and one response. And certainly some individuals need more encouragement or maybe more prompting for that to come out. I just find that writing good prompts, asking good questions is very much like writing a good prompting exercise for writing. It's if you can find, it's almost like coming up with a key to unlock what that story is and create the space for it. And the more you practice that ability, the easier it is to do one-on-one with a patient and one-on-one in that environment. And so I find that usually by taking an approach, you know, so in the case where with Karen's photo documentary, it was finding different questions. So in order to get, you know, like, you know, tell me what it is that brings you here today, what is it that led to this path, you can often get much richer information than what typically we can.
Right. So then thinking about those things that you had mentioned, how would you recommend someone get started in terms of developing these types of techniques as a skilled area?
Yeah, and as I kind of alluded to at the beginning, I see it first and foremost as a personal practice, so that obviously that we're doing clinically, but it's also listening to the stories of ourselves. And so that there is a layer of personal work that comes out of this. And this can simply be through the practice of close reading. So, and when I use that term close reading, that refers to a rigorous examination of a literary text or other media, and then reflective writing about that through the use of prompts and writing prompts. And you learn a lot about yourself in the process of doing that. And as I said before, like the parts of the story you listen to, what parts you attend to, what you ignore and why. And for me, the truth is that there is, you know, a rich pedagogy underlying that technique, that balance of close reading and reflective writing. And it really is one of those things where experiencing it firsthand, particularly with people who know what they're doing and how they're doing it, is one of the best ways, I think, to learn the skills of doing it. Narrative practice is an art which references itself, so the tools and techniques are actually built into the experience of doing it. It's very helpful to take, like, as I mentioned, I experienced it for the first time through Columbia University's workshops with their faculty and their members. And from that experience, I feel actually quite comfortable today writing and reading my own prompts, even those that I do individually or in small groups.
So it definitely sounds like it's a practice that sort of evolves over time and with that, and with experience.
Yeah, very much so, very much so. And I think one of the kind of challenges with it are that it can have, how do you want to say this, is what you bring to it is often what you get out of it. So that's why I think they have such broad, it has such broad impact. You know, when we look at research studies that talk about narrative practice and the impact of narrative practice, what is its value? Within our professional literature, as physiotherapists, there's evidence talking about, you know, how it helps us to develop our senses of professional identity. Because when you share stories of practice with each other, amongst other therapists, you begin to define the boundaries of what it is to be a professional. There's a huge body of work focused on narrative ethics and using narratives, the exchanging of stories, as a way of defining ethics within beyond simple lists of kind of, you know, these are the principles, the ethical principles we follow. The stories help flesh out the details of that, and learning to kind of listen to those stories and how to get that information and sharing that information with one another is actually a really, really demonstrative way of learning about those things.
So I think where we are now, I think we've kind of established a very good platform to say kind of why this approach can be really effective, especially in the area of pain sciences, but also quite broadly through physiotherapy as a profession. Where I wanted to go next in our conversation was to see if we could anticipate a few potential barriers into implementing this type of practice into a clinician's work. And so usually in terms of looking at barriers, one of the first things that comes up often is a lack of time or perceived lack of time by the clinician.
Yeah, and this one for me, as a woman who wears many hats, I know intimately that we often perceive that there's a lack of time because there is actually a lack of time. But it's actually, it's funny, that perception. But for me, this is my truth. I like to think when I use these techniques, I think of it as investing time in the success of my treatment. So by taking a few extra minutes to ensure that my patient is heard, not just feels, is heard, it feels that way, and more importantly, that the information that I've gleaned from their case is accurate to their understanding, that we're building a mutual understanding of that information, I know that I'm going to save time in the long run by getting the right treatment plan, you know, which is, you know, that patient is going to be an active partner in. So, and I think about like how much time is wasted when we get that wrong, you know, when we jump to a conclusion that's incorrect or isn't exactly matching our patient's experience or value set. And I know I have, personally, I know I have, you know, as a physiotherapist. So for me, I tend to think of it as an investment. And when I'm questioned by others, you know, how long is that assessment taking? Where is that going? I often will talk about it in that term, you know, that I'm trying to get the best possible intervention. So many of our interventions require our patients to be active participants. Certainly our most evidence-based interventions, when we look at chronic disease self-management and exercise, these are not pills that we prescribe to people. They have to be active partners in the care, and getting that right is important to the efficacy of the treatment.
And I think that's the idea of that perception around lack of time. I think I really appreciate what the way you framed that through there in terms of looking at it as an investment and taking a bit of a bigger picture approach to it and seeing exactly looking at it as an investment and also looking at the value of different things as well in order to kind of balance that that lack of time issue out. Another kind of potential barrier, I think, that some people might be thinking is, there may be a question about the amount of psychology that goes into this practice, and if there's and the perception that this might be something that's either sort of stretching the edges of our scope or out of our scope, or something that can't be implemented in, without formal training. What are your thoughts on those issues?
And so I think, you know, I touched a little bit on that personally. I valued having some additional workshop training, primarily from the point of view of understanding the pedagogy, understanding the teaching structure behind what they were doing and how this worked. Certainly we are formally trained to ask open-ended questions in our practice and how we use those. I think at its what the folks at narrative medicine, what they would often say is that narrative medicine isn't a therapy. It's not trying to be a therapy. It's not its intent, but it can have therapeutic benefits. And so it's one of those examples where there are benefits that can come from something that are not design intent to be, you know, to be a therapy. And so I think from that perspective, it falls within our scope. I think what this also helps us to understand is kind of where those limits are. So when you are working with patients and getting a sense of where they're at, it can help us understand where our interprofessional boundaries are and also when those doors should be knocked on. So when, you know, you're reaching that point where, you know, having more active involvement from psychology or psychiatry in a patient's care and a case, I think is important. Or even our, you know, our colleagues in occupational therapy who do this work as well. So for me, I found through the doing of it that I learned more about where the boundaries were and where, you know, appropriate referrals existed by doing the work.
And I think if we kind of think back to our conversation earlier about this in the context of the assessment, I think in the in some of those points that you had made there, there wasn't really anything that was in terms of skill or training, as you said, anything that's outside of what we would already know. It's just it's more of an issue of kind of how you do it rather than what exactly you are doing.
Right. And I think in the application for me as a physio, I it wasn't so much that I was leading groups of my patients in narrative medicine seminars. There are people who do that. There are people who in social work and in psychology who do that as part of their intent, is that they would do those seminars and practice amongst patients. But for me, I looked at it more as a personal activity or a method within the professional practice to understand our professional identities more than it is to actually treat an underlying health condition. I don't know if that's making sense, but it's I also think in terms of the intent with which you are approaching the work, the nature of the writing that you do, the nature of the prompts that you're writing, the types of work that you're focusing your efforts on.
Yeah, I think it absolutely does make sense, and I think one of the most interesting pieces about it is that the net effect of it is actually more insights into the profession and into scope and that type of thing. So where the perception might be that it's outside of the scope, it's more the actual effect is that there's more insights into what exactly that scope is and what the limits are. So I think we're about ready to close here. I think if there's for people who are listening who are looking for a few additional resources or wanted to learn more about some of the things that you've talked about today, can you direct us to a couple of resources where we might be able to learn more?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's actually I have quite a list of resources that. I'd be happy to share, and if there's a way to post them in terms of links of articles or things of that nature.
Sure.
But really, I would highly recommend folks have a look at the Narrative Medicine program out of Columbia University, which I'm pretty sure is narrativemedicine.org. And they actually have some online resources and links to descriptions and workshops and things that they do. But there are some articles certainly that I can give you links to, Irfan, if there's a way for you to build that into your post.
Yeah, absolutely. So Trish, thank you very much for discussing that with me today. It's I think there's a lot to be learned and a lot to be taken away from using narrative practice in the area of pain sciences as well as other areas of physiotherapy. So thank you again for taking the time to talk about it with me.